Welcome to Learning Manners, brought to you by Michigan Virtual. I'm Ann Thomas. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Dave Richards, Executive Learning Strategist for Michigan Virtual. On this edition of the show, we'll talk with a great panel of very experienced educators with impressive insight on innovation and education, and we'll try to answer the question of how innovation will impact the future of learning. A great show, an interesting show, coming up next. Welcome to Learning Matters, brought to you by Michigan Virtual. I'm Ann Thomas, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Dave Richards, Executive Learning Strategist for Michigan Virtual. On this edition of the show, we're going to talk with local superintendents and an expert learning designer about the current challenges and opportunities facing leaders as they navigate the redesign of learning environments to better meet the needs of today's learners. And Dave, I want to welcome our roundtable. This is going to be a great conversation. We have Dr. Julie Helber. She is the superintendent of Chelsea, the Chelsea School District. Dr. Helber, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And we have Dr. Elena Zachary Ross. She is the superintendent of the Ypsilanti Community Schools. Dr. Ross, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have Dr. Christopher Harrington. He is the Senior Director of Innovative School Design at Michigan Virtual. Dr. Harrington, great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Ann. It's great to be here.
And Dave, I'm going to have you kind of kick off the questioning here because you have a very strong opinion about the direction that we should be taking with regard to learning and education, kind of in the pandemic and post-pandemic.
Yeah, thank you, Ann. I'm excited to have this group of leaders with us today to really talk through what learning is going to look like currently and then also going forward. But before we do that, I'd like to ask each of them to just kind of do a quick introduction so that the audience can learn a little bit more about yourselves. And then we'll jump into some of the questions that we have. Dr. Helber, would you mind introducing yourself?
Of course. So I am Dr. Julie Helber, and I have been in education for over 30 years. I'm currently the superintendent of the Chelsea School District, where I have been for the past 6 years.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And Dr. Zachary Ross.
Hello, Dr. Elena Zachary Ross. I am the proud superintendent of Ypsilanti Community Schools. I've been in education for 27 years. I've been a superintendent. This is my 10th year, and I've been in Ypsilanti Community Schools since 2018.
Wonderful. Welcome. Dr. Harrington.
Hi, thank you. I'm Chris Harrington. I've been in education for over 30 years now as a teacher, central office administrator, professor in a doctoral program for ed leadership, and now I'm at Michigan Virtual and leading the consulting efforts with schools in Michigan and across the country.
Thank you, Chris. Dr. Helber, if you don't mind, I'd like to start the conversation with you. Obviously, the pandemic has been incredibly challenging for local leaders in navigating the pandemic, providing the needs for kids while also making sure that the learning experiences have been of the same quality as best as possible. Wanted to get your thoughts on what do you see the pandemic has had on learning, and what are some steps that you've taken in Chelsea to address some of those challenges?
Well, you aren't kidding, Dr. Richards, that it has definitely been a challenge these last few years, and I know that my fellow superintendent there will concur with that. Initially, we all had to make that sort of scrambling move to online learning, and that was challenging because that was a change of our instructional approach. It was something our teachers had to learn. You hear the saying, we build the airplane while we're flying it. And so that was really what was happening in school districts. And basically, we needed to make sure that all of our students had access, first of all, to their education. Once we got through some of those challenges, We started to also see that we really needed to make some connections with our students from a social emotional learning perspective. They were had a bit of social isolation, and we knew that we needed to be reaching out to them. And first of all, making sure they're okay. None of us had to go through a pandemic while we learned in school. And so we wanted to make sure our students were okay and ready and capable of learning. And then it was looking at how do we innovate so that we can reach all of our students in this new virtual learning environment. And we provided time for our teachers to collaborate. And I think that was a big key to making this successful, was getting our teachers together to collaborate around how would they instruct through this new means of learning? How would they break up the day so that our students would connect and engage and have access the way that we needed them to? And so that was a big piece of it. Secondly, when the students came back, we needed to determine how much of an impact did the pandemic have on them learning-wise? Where were there gaps for our students, and what did we need to do to address those gaps? So while we continued to focus on the social-emotional learning side, we did really hone in on where those gaps might be for our students. And we hired folks to come into the district to do coaching for our teachers, but also intervention for our students. We had tutoring programs going on. We ran a pretty large summer school program last year to really look at where our students were in terms of learning. What was pleasantly a surprise was that our students are so resilient. You know, they come back hungry and ready to go. But what it also did was give our teachers a little bit more tools in the toolbox to be able to teach and meet the needs of their students. And so there was a lot to be learned over this time.
Yeah, it's interesting. The pandemic almost forced innovation and accelerated at the pace at which we adopted and innovated as we went through it. Dr. Zaki Ross, in your district, you've spent a tremendous amount of time caring for the kids and really truly building up those social emotional needs, but you really involved your community. Can you talk a little bit about some of the steps that you took so that the audience can hear how Ypsilanti truly brought the community into the process in responding to the pandemic?
Absolutely. Our mantra here is stronger together. And so immediately when we were faced with this challenge, we first brought in our experts, which are educators. We had 100 people on our task force. And in that task force, we thought about what needs our students might have, what needs our parents might have, and most importantly, who might we leverage in our community to support those needs. We were not a one-to-one district. So first things first, we ordered the computers, headphones, because there's so many students who have multiple children in the family. And so making sure we had that, we partnered with Ann Arbor Community Foundation for the computers. Yet we also said, now, if we're going to give them this, how might they get internet services? Mm-hmm. So we partnered with Eastern Michigan University and Game Above to make sure that it was done in a way that honored families. Many families didn't want to go to Comcast or other places where they had a bill. And so we made that a way that was psychologically safe for families to be able to access the internet. And if they weren't able to even have that connection, because talking about the emotional needs, there are families at that, when we went into this pandemic, who are homeless. We have the largest homeless population in the county. And so we knew for them, this wasn't just about getting the device nor connecting with long-term internet. We needed to give them devices and hotspots so that they can have that. Where we also knew that our students come to school every day, and many of them count on us for their breakfast, their lunch, and even their after school snack for food stability. And so we put food distribution centers all across the city. And we did that in partnership. We had them in community centers. We had the distribution at churches. We knew that bus systems were shut down and we couldn't just have them inside of the building. And that led to us saying, well, we know there are some students who need, who have been in person, and we kept that small group of in person, but they didn't feel comfortable riding the bus all the way to the district. So we made partner with Washtenaw Community College and the Housing Authority, whereas students were able to go in their neighborhoods to have instruction, to have stable internet, to be able to receive food right there in their community. And to deal with the social emotional needs, we worked with community mental health, and we had town halls throughout the year so that parents could talk to our community mental health social workers so they can know what it means. They hadn't been teachers before. They didn't know how to have their child at home all day, dealing with the academics and at home. So that was a huge piece of having the town halls, as well as running compassion resilience circles for parents as well as staff members. And last but not least, we knew that in the past, parents had been going to the individual buildings for closed closet to receive food, pantries, to have social emotional help, and students as well. And we knew they couldn't run to an early learning center, then an elementary, middle, and high school building. So we created a one-stop shop called the Resiliency Center, where you can get social emotional help. You can pick up Pampers, or you can pick up food items. You can pick up school supplies, make copies, print off your paper if you are a student. And that Resiliency Center continues today, as parents and students have told us, we want to feel dignified. We want to have one place to go where we can get this social emotional support and academic support that we need.
You know, it's amazing as I hear how you embrace the community in this process. Even though it was shifting to a very high tech environment, you kept the human side of it at the front of the conversation. And I think, Dr. Harrington, your experiences in working with folks across the country, you've seen a lot of different challenges. What would you say have been the primary ones? We've heard from both instructional as well as the community, the human capital side. What are some other things that you've seen?
Yeah, I think very similar to Dr. Helber and Dr. Zachary Ross, what you've cited in your own schools. We see that across Michigan, those same challenges. We see it across the entire country. And during the pandemic in particular, student engagement, when everybody was forced into that remote learning environment, which I would argue is very different than what we know to be truly effective online or virtual learning, this remote learning environment was a huge challenge because kids, families, and teachers were thrust into an environment where they really weren't very familiar with it. And you know, as we know, there are families, as the pandemic seems to have shifted very significantly since spring of 2020, there are a lot of families and students who realize that, hey, this learning format works for me. And it's still a challenge, this student engagement, engaging kids and families in the virtual environment. You know, so that's something that is a challenge that occurred back then, but it's a challenge that remains. And during the pandemic, when we had school closures and everyone was pushed to be remote, there was a huge amount of stress at a personal and a professional level. Mm-hmm. And what I'm seeing now is there's still a high level of fatigue that is present with teachers and administrators and even families. That is something that now kind of is like a hindrance for us as we start looking at what positive things happened during the pandemic that we can take away and channel that into a more future-looking educational model. But because that fatigue still remains, it still is a challenge to try to move forward, because in a lot of ways, we're just trying to get back to the way we used to be. So I will say, though, that the reliance on technology that we have developed as a result of the pandemic, it has increased from the past. And I think we're now needing to respond in ways using that technology in ways that we never were before. So I think that's another challenge, especially for us adults, as we move into teaching in a more digital kind of a way.
And Dave, let's take a quick break. And when we come back after the break, let's take a look, and I'm going to ask each panelist this question. What was the one thing that you changed during the pandemic that really worked that you're going to keep in place? We'll be right back on Learning Matters in just a few minutes. Are listening to Learning Matters. I'm Ann Thomas. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Dave Richards. And we've got a great panelist of very experienced educators with us today. Dave, Dr. Julie Helber, superintendent of the Chelsea School District, Dr. Elena Zachary Ross, superintendent of the Ypsilanti Community Schools. And we have Dr. Christopher Harrington, senior director of innovative school design at Michigan Virtual. And before the break, I gave everybody a little homework assignment. It's kind of a quick one. It was only a couple minutes break, but I know you guys are up for this. Let's start with Dr. Christopher Harrington. Dr. Harrington, what was the one change that was made in the education world that was great and that you really think needs to stay in place?
I think one of the things that happened in schools and districts across the country was the realization that they need to be far more connected to kids and to families. During the pandemic, we lost contact with some kids, and we didn't have great connections with them. It created a lot of disengagement, and it was a struggle. And we made extra efforts to try to connect with kids academically, but then also just for some social services, just making sure they're okay. Mm-hmm. And I know that has turned into a high priority for schools and districts now moving forward. You know, as we emerge out of a pandemic, this is something that will resonate with schools for a long time now.
And Dr. Zachary Ross, what do you think was the best thing to come out of the pandemic in the education world?
You know, our district was not one-to-one prior to the pandemic. This access to technology gave our students and families access to each other and access to the world. So with each other, our parents have said, we want to continue virtual conferences. Yeah. If I have a job, if I need to be able to come in and have a meeting virtually, is that still an option? Yes, that's going to continue. But also the access to the world. We went to national museums. We talked to students from all over the country and other countries. The access that our students were able to have since they've received this technology has been phenomenal.
And Dr. Helber, what worked best in your world? What did you like best that you want to stay?
It's interesting, Dr. Zachary Ross talks about parent-teacher conferences. That was also a place where we felt it was a success. We had more participation in parent-teacher conferences than ever when we did it virtually and offered sort of both options this year for folks. But really, you know, we had been in the throes of implementing our portrait of a graduate, which was part of our strategic framework. And in that, we had identified academic, social, and emotional learning competencies that we really felt like our students, we wanted our students to have by the time they left us at graduation point. We were really working in that academic area before COVID hit, and we really fell into the social, emotional portion of our portrait of a graduate. And by doing that, I would agree with Dr. Harrington in terms of making connections with students and families, checking on their well-being, making sure that we were providing them with healthy meals, with access to the internet, one-to-one, all of those things will carry forward. And what we learned about social emotional learning and also about staff health and wellness during this time was really important. And so we will continue to be very mindful of our students' social and emotional learning and their health and our staff. So I think those are the things that we'll pull through. And then beyond that, there's so much innovation happening. And this is like a springboard for us to say, where do we go next? Because we know that we made sort of the impossible possible in a like overnight. And so what's next for us and what can we do to really meet the needs of our learners? And I think that's what this has unveiled is each one of our learners have their own set of unique needs. And now that they can get kids and adults alike can get any information that they want just by a simple Google search or looking on the internet, we need to figure out then how do we connect our students to all of this knowledge that's available and then be able to personalize the learning to meet all of our students' needs.
In April, Michigan Virtual sponsored a group of superintendents to travel out to the ASU GSV conference in California. And it was amazing, Dr. Zachary Ross, you were there. You had an opportunity, I think you also presented while you were there, to attend. And it was kind of this Cirque du Soleil of entrepreneurs, educational companies with educators coming together and really forecasting out where learning is going. Your takeaways, having attended that conference and what you saw in regards to innovation and these disruptions that we're talking about, what were some of your key thoughts from that meeting?
You know, that conference was very inspirational, going to visit actually schools there that took innovation to a new level. I think sometimes we are caught up as educators hearing the words learning loss. And what I noticed with the innovation was thinking, moving from deficit thinking to asset-based thinking. What is possible for our students? How might we connect them beyond the basics of the academics to having transferable skills that allow them to choose pathways for themselves and allowing them to look at themselves as saying, I have skills right now. I've been innovative, as Dr. Helber has said. There's opportunity that I've been creative during this pandemic, and how do I just continue to press forward? And it really gave me me and my leadership team the connection to how to continue that surge of innovation. How do we continue to develop the skills necessary? We know that right now, everyone talks about the great resignation. So how are we preparing students, not just for graduation, but for a career beyond the K-12 setting?
And Dr. Harrington, part of this challenge, I think, right now is that time has been compressed for so many leaders because of the pandemic and the challenges that have come from that. Realistically, what is it going to take time-wise for districts to go through this transformation process as they look to innovate and design new models of learning?
Yeah, and unfortunately, the process of doing a really thorough and good job with this is not something that can be hurried. Stephen Covey has the phrase, slow is fast and fast is slow. If you try to hurry some things and don't get the right kind of buy-in and ownership of a greater school community, that might be the long way to go, because you could fail and have levels of rejection along the way with whatever you're trying to do, whatever you're trying to innovate. But quite frankly, you know, the whole process starts with creating some sort of a uncovering of a vision. I say an uncovering because a school community, we're talking about not just those people inside the school building, but we're talking about your business community, your general citizenry. And the community has an expectation of a school or a district. And you have to meet the community as a school leader, what the community wants, right? So going through a process of uncovering this vision it's common for 6 to 9 month process to start having some stakeholder conversations, surveys, that's all a great part of this process, and focus group conversations. That can take 6 to 9 months because it does take time to process this out. But honestly, to effectively make change then, you're really talking about another 2 to 3 years, I would say, at least, in order to be able to start developing and executing some plans to get that done. And at the heart of it all is the constant ongoing communication and conversations with stakeholder groups. It's just not surveying and focus groups and saying, okay, now we know. It's an ongoing dialogue.
And Dr. Helber, when you think about it, you mentioned earlier 30 plus years in education. As a leader, what do you need from your community to navigate through this time?
Yeah, I think that because the world is changing so rapidly, And what we're thinking about in education is this real, pretty large gap between how we currently do school, if you will, and where we really need to be in terms of where the world is evolving to. And I think that we need to make sure that we're communicating and collaborating with families and parents, and so they can understand where this gap is. Because oftentimes we go back to look at our own education and say, this is so drastically different. And so it puts up some barriers in terms of positive change. And so I think it's really important that we bring our, like Dr. Harrington said, bring our communities along with us, have those conversations, show them what's out there and how we need to connect to students and really help our families to join on this path with us and this journey with us to innovation. We really do need to start looking at what individual students need in relation to their knowledge base and where they are. And we need to start to think about school in a little bit different way. You know, just because you're an eighth grader, does that mean you're in third grade? You know, in some of these ways, a little bit antiquated ways that educational systems were set up, need to be relooked at so that we make sure that we're meeting the needs of our students in their future and the future world that they'll live in.
Now let's take a quick break. And in this last segment that we have with our education panel, Dave, let's also take a look at one example of an innovation that our parents and students in our audience could actually relate to. So if we could give an example of, you know, something that you're really thinking about that you would like to see actually happen in the next few years, taking into consideration what Dr. Harrington is saying, which is it doesn't happen overnight. But in your dream world, one innovation that you want to see put in place. We will continue this conversation right after these messages. You are listening to Learning Matters. I'm Ann Thomas. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Dave Richards, and a really fascinating conversation today, Dave, with some excellent, experienced educators. Wow. Dr. Julie Helber, superintendent of the Chelsea School District, Dr. Elena Zachary Ross, superintendent of the Ypsilanti Community Schools, and Dr. Christopher Harrington, senior director of innovative school design at Michigan Virtual. And the question that I asked before the break is, in your dream world, and I'm going to start with Dr. Helber, what is the one innovation that you would love to see in our school system?
So if I had to pick one right now, I would pick the requirements of demonstrating competency in project-based learning over the entire school career. So I would love to see our kindergartners and our seniors alike working in groups, exercising the four C's, you know, critical thinking, collaboration, creativity, and communication, to work through a problem, design a solution, present that solution out to community members, maybe at the lower levels, it's parents, and at the upper levels, it's actual business and industry, to get feedback on their solution to whatever was the project focus or the problem, and then go back and redesign. This work takes time. And so oftentimes within the rigidity of our school systems and grades and trimesters and everything else, we say, that's just going to take up too much time and I won't be able to get to X, Y, Z in the math sequence or in the science sequence. But I would suggest that by doing large projects like these, you're pulling together competencies from all different areas. And so it's really interdisciplinary and our students end up learning more on the other side. I would contend that if you asked anybody, what do you remember? What learning experience do you remember from your own school when you were in school? I don't think anybody would say, I remember getting an A on the on the science test. I think they would describe a project where they worked together in groups to solve a problem, and it stuck with them for years and years to come. And so I would say that that would be a requirement that at each level we have some sort of competency-based project that would allow kids to work together to exercise those four C's.
Wow, that's very cool. Dr. Zachary Ross, what do you think?
Now, I know that Dr. Helber and I work in the same county. However, you won't believe my thought was the competency-based graduation pathways. The reason being is because we had this opportunity during the pandemic to explore different time periods, different for with seat time, with being able to connect work-based learning, project-based learning. This will give students an opportunity to have early on internships, apprenticeships, volunteering at places, even mentors from the industries. We need to give our students mirrors so they can see themselves and windows out to what's available to them. And it's got to be beyond, I need this credit because it's the Michigan Merit Curriculum. And parents, it is innovative. It would take some change in our pupil accounting manual. It would take some changes in our Michigan Merit Curriculum. However, do we want to ensure that our students use their skills and their passion to align that to their future careers? And I believe that we do.
That's fascinating, too. And Dr. Harrington, what are your thoughts on this issue?
Well, first of all, I could listen to Dr. Zachary Ross and Dr. Helber all day.
I know.
I absolutely agree with everything that they've said. What I would love to see an innovation is what happens is school leaders who are very innovative like this, they seem to have to find creative ways around existing policy and structures within our educational systems. So they kind of have to develop some workarounds or get as much ground as they can towards this ideal. And what would be innovating, in my opinion, and what I would love to see happen is actually state policy driving this, not us trying as educators trying to push up against these barriers and trying to find ways to overcome them. But it would be innovative if we could just have the doors flung wide open to us to be, from a state policy level that just lets us do what we believe needs to be done.
And I'm going to jump in on this one as well. As a former superintendent, my crazy talk with our parents was always when I knew we got to a certain point with competency-based, I wanted to get rid of grade levels. Uh-huh. And the startling part of that is simply because the only reason we have grade levels is when a child was born. It's not an indicator where they're at academically, what their proficiency level is. Dr. Harrington and I could be in the same classroom, but if I need more time at math, he's still in my cohort, and so he has to stay with me. He's not able to move at his own pace and to move as fast as he could in that process. That doesn't mean that we need to give up on the socialization side of it. I still want to be in band with my classmates. I still want to play football. Age appropriate levels and all that. But academically, can we set kids free? If I need more time, if I'm a struggler that, just my English language arts, whatever it may be, I need more time. Can we create a system that allows us to focus and design for every child? We are living in a customized learning environment. One of the quotes that I've heard probably 10 years ago was from Stephen Heppel, who said, "It's the death of education and the dawn of learning." Meaning the system is ready to sunset, but the sunrise is around learning. If we can design with learning at the center rather than the structure of school being how we do everything, and that's what Dr. Helber was really speaking to, is can we take the handcuffs off on time? And that means if you can move faster as a fourth grader, let's create a way for you to do that. In the gaming world, the gaming environment, and we saw a lot of this at the ASU GSV conference, they're unleashing the gaming environment because kids can move up and down on levels as fast as they want to. Right. But we don't do that in learning. And you can learn through failing in a gaming environment. We don't really do that in traditional schools. So I feel like that's the disruption that's coming, is we have to make learning fixed and time the variable. as we get into more of these conversations.
And after all, as educators and parents, aren't we all about helping our children become successful, happy, healthy adults? And aren't we supposed to be teaching them to live, work, and play in the real world? So all of these ideas make perfect sense. Now, Dave, I know you've got a few more questions for our panelists before we have to let them go.
Absolutely. Dr. Harrington, I want to bring that quote to you, the death of education and the dawn of learning. Again, you get to work with a lot of folks as a consultant for Michigan Virtual. Take a couple of minutes and just talk about that, what it means, what you're seeing of how schools are starting to focus on learning rather than the structure of school.
Yeah, I think the pandemic and what we've been through with the pandemic really opened up the eyes to a lot of school leaders where our model of education is not one that is really focused on learning. It's really around teaching. And when we weren't able to teach in the same format or modality that we were accustomed to, we really struggled. And that's no fault of teachers. It's just teachers were good at teaching in a certain way, and not everybody was good at teaching in this new way. And over the next 10 years, for example, I think the demand coming from families and kids and from the school community is going to force the hand of change. We've started to feel it already prior to the pandemic, but now I think we're at a point now where people realize that there are other ways to do this and more effective ways for my kid and for my whole family. So I think that's what we're going to be seeing coming up in the future.
And Dr. Helbert, can I just ask you really quickly about what supports do leaders need in building their capacity to lead this within their local learning communities?
I think what we need is collaboration with one another. We've seen through the Future of Learning group that support for innovation in education and the ideas just start pouring out of folks if given that opportunity to really kind of talk about and envision what's next in education. And so I think that continuing that collaboration with one another and having those support systems for, you know, the crazy idea Dr. Richards has about getting rid of grades, that we have people who really believe in this movement toward meeting the needs of our students individually, so that we have the support systems and the confidence and the efficacy over moving to these new areas that we want to move to.
And Dr. Helbert, Dr. Zachary Ross, Dr. Harrington, thank you so much for your time today. We'll have to do another show with this panel because I have a feeling there's a lot more to talk about, Dave.
Absolutely. Thank you all for being here, and thank you for the work that you do every day.
You've been listening to Learning Matters. On behalf of my co-host, Dr. Dave Richards, I'm Ann Thomas. Thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of your day.